Here, man, there's your mic. Got some headphones.
You miss ODB, man?
I miss him, man. Although, you know, the son is Russell. His son's kind of incredible, but yeah, we miss him. Do you not know that's because they've got his son, young DB, Whitehead.
I had no idea.
Let's bring it in and then let's get into good stuff here.
Go for it, dude.
Hey everybody, welcome to a special edition of Hot Box, and I'm Evan Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson.
Mike, we got a great guest today, man.
Awesome guest.
Exciting.
Very awesome. This is very interesting guest we have
here. Yeah, it takes a lot to get me out on a Saturday morning.
I love
to do a podcast.
Thank you.
And
we
not just podcast,
that.
But also to Hot Box. But I would like, I do this, I, you know, I come in here Sunday midnight, you know, 3 in the morning. Tell me when to come, I'm here.
I love that. John Heilemann, everybody.
Thank you, guys. It's just awesome to be here. This is, I've been looking forward to this day ever since we started talking about doing it. So here we are. And I grew up here, man. I grew up, not in El Segundo, but in fact, you know, my dad moved here from the Midwest in the late 50s. He was from Milwaukee, and when he moved out to California, the first job he had when he moved to L.A. was working for Litton Industries, an aerospace firm, in El Segundo. So feels like I'm in my ancestral spiritual home. But I grew up in the Valley, out in the far West Valley, out near in Canoga Park.
Nice, man.
So that's my and I was here for the first 18 years of my life, and then left and have not lived here since, but I come back a lot. So LA always feels like my original.
Where do you live now?
I live in New York City.
Okay.
Yeah. Love it out there now, huh?
So, you know, I moved from here, your current home, to your old home. And in fact, my first place I lived in when I moved to New York in 2002, 2003 was in Fort Greene.
That's where I was born, where my dad lived.
Yeah.
So, Cumberland Hospital.
Yeah. So I lived right on the park, right on
Washington Park.
Right on Washington Park. Yeah. I lived at 209 Washington Park on the corner.
No shit. My dad lives at 208 Washington Park.
Oh, no.
Fuck. That's crazy, man. That's amazing.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no.
So my wife and I lived there right on the corner of Washington Park and DeKalb, like right across from the park.
I live on the Franklin between DeKalb and Willoughby.
And that park, as you know, man, like now it's all gentrified. And so the park is great. You can go and hang out there with the dogs and everybody all day, all night. It's great.
And beautiful.
And 15 years before... 20 years before, you could not go in that park.
I remember around 1977, they were filming a movie. It was around 77, 76, I guess, with Education of Sonny Carson or something. And they had all the gang fight pictures in Washington Park. Mm. I was a little kid, we all went down there.
Yeah, wow.
Man, that's it used to not be that. That was not a place you went at night.
No, scary.
Not a
Real
place.
Scary. North Portland Avenue, South Portland.
Yeah, it's crazy how that whole part of Brooklyn, you know, the Fort Greene, Clinton Hill, Bed-Stuy.
If you weren't like white or Puerto Rican or Italian, you better not go around there.
Yeah, right. Not the case now. It's nice. It's actually one of the great there's some places in Brooklyn that obviously totally gentrified, but that neighborhood. Still, that whole complex over there, Bed-Stuy, Clinton Hill, Brownsville still
bad.
We
got to change the name.
Yeah, right.
The name is bad. It brings up so much stuff from the past.
But it's a nice mix over there. A lot of Brooklyn now. It's like you got these nice neighborhoods where it's like, you know, half, you know.
You don't have to worry about somebody snatching your head off or something.
That's true. And that's probably a good thing. You lived there when it was a lot tougher.
Holy moly. Mm. Listen, when I go to NASA, was my life a lie?
Yeah.
Was that actually true? Did I live like this? This is not a place that somebody that had nothing and everybody's on welfare, and it's just unbelievable what they did there.
How do you like California?
California is God's country.
Yeah. How long you lived here now?
I lived here before. I moved back here a year ago, but I lived here before in 87.
Right.
88.
And you moved back out here when?
Last year.
Last year.
Yes.
Right. And so this is it. You're here. You're done. California's going to be your home forever now.
It appears that way, but I don't know.
You look at home here.
I am at home here, but you just never know what the energy has in store for you.
He's got this shirt. That's a shirt of a person that's an LA shirt is what that is, right?
I did the opposite. I was born in New York City.
Yeah.
Lived in Park Slope till I was 10. Then my mom moved my brother and I out to LA. lived in Burbank.
Burbank.
Right down the 101 from you, man.
Yeah.
Listen, if you lived in New York, you wouldn't have this Zen energy, man. You'd be a great.
I know. I might have just turned into a weed dealer if I had stayed.
I think it's the better, the path. I mean, like, I think that both places are great and they have great energy and it's kind of great too. I don't know. I always feel like I have become such a New Yorker, but I still have that California thing, like, down. You know, it's like people in New York still, there's like the, you gotta have a metabolism to live
Absolutely.
In New York, right? You gotta have a certain metabolism.
High energy,
right? But yeah. But then the question is there, at the bottom of that, is there stress and tension, or are you basically
connected.
Or are you basically chill,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I think coming from California and living in New York, it's like there's a, you know, you keep, my metabolism's pretty high, but there's also like this, I still have like the California, that core. I still have this California bottom.
That resonates with me.
Yeah,
for
you know
sure.
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I think you meet people who can work in both places. There's people you meet in LA who could never hack
Handle.
New York.
Yeah.
And you meet people in New York who could never hack LA. They'd just be like, they're.
Lose their minds,
yeah. right? But if you have that, then there's this kind of category of person who can play in both places and like feels comfortable in both places. And that's a good vibe.
I vibe with that too.
Yeah,
people in New York are so amazed how friendly the people out here are.
Yeah.
You say, wow, people in California are so cool. You know, you could talk to them. You don't know them. You can say hi to them. You would not say hi to somebody in New York if you don't know them.
Yeah.
How you do? They just walk right by you. They might get, who the fuck are you?
What?
You hitting on me, motherfucker? You know, New York is weird. If you don't know them, don't say.
They don't have time.
Yeah, don't say anything.
People don't have time.
I think most people, if you came up and said, hey, they'd probably say, hi.
Yeah, listen. When
it
I was
you.
This what happened one day. I was came back to my old neighborhood. I was 14 at the time, right? And I was living with Cuss, so I had probably a year or two. So I have a whole different life reaction than back in Black Brownsville. So I'm in Brownsville, and some guy on the street, where I'm with my friend, and he said, what's up? I said, hey, what's up, man? Because I'm used to being, now everybody knows me, I fight, and everybody says hi to me upstate New York, so I come down here, and this guy says hi to me. Hey, say, hey, how you doing? And my friend said, yo, Mike, you know him? I said, nah. So what you say hi to him for? I said, I don't know. I said, fuck that nigga. Don't say hi to that motherfucker. And that's just how it was.
Wow.
You don't know him, don't talk to him.
And your friend was still in the Brooklyn mindset.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of lifestyle it was.
Yeah.
Don't say hi to somebody you don't know.
Yeah, dude. I remember
that. This guy might be trying to hit on you or something.
Yeah.
That's the mindset.
I mean, in L.A., you might try to say hi to somebody and they might be totally emotionally shut down. But, you know.
Dead.
They're still.
Dead in this. Like, dead at the level of soul. Just completely dead-souled.
Yeah, but
like
at
soul,
least.
Like a zombie soul, you know? Like the soul of one of those zombie dragons
but you have
in Game
to
of Thrones.
It's true.
Kind of
you have totally it's two true. Different cultures.
Yeah.
It's totally two different.
Totally different. But. Similar in certain aspects. I think there's a level of thinking happening in both cities.
Yeah.
That, you know, is very high level.
New York is this way.
Well it's funny.
LA
like
LA is this way.
Well, just on like, just even, just even like you think about on the, if you go, yeah, I grew up here and then I've lived in a bunch of places. I lived in Washington, D.C. and Chicago and London and Boston, a bunch of places. And then at one point, I went up and lived in San Francisco for about 4 years, like 1998 to 2002, right before I moved to New York. And what's cool is, and the thing that you're saying, I think that is true, if you think about these big, broad social change, you know, whether it's legalizing cannabis or gay marriage or the environmental movement or whatever, like big things that have changed the country. A lot of them start here. You know, it's like a lot of them in Northern California and to some extent in Southern California, where the social, the progress takes root in California, and California is, you know, 10, 20 years ahead of the rest of the country. And then the sort of next, the East Coast, which everybody thinks of being as super liberal. Everybody thinks California is super liberal too. But it's – even though they're both liberal politically, the change often starts here. And then sort of gets adopted by other progressive minds outside of California. So it's like California is like the birthplace of a lot of those big changes.
I would say that 100%.
Yeah.
And that is the Black Power movement.
Right.
Yeah. California.
Yeah, totally.
Mm. Yeah.
You think about all the shit in the late 60s that came out of that Northern California scene, whether it was like the free speech movement, the Black Power movement, the environmental movement, computers, you know, and all the stuff around people taking control over their lives through technology, you know, the notion of personal technology and the ability to, like, you know, use these big computer systems
to come to this where we have this,
where it's individual, right? Yeah. That's like, that's a huge social change too. And a lot of that stuff took root up there. And then, you know, eventually kind of like the thing starts on the West Coast and gets adopted then on the East Coast, and then eventually washes over the rest of the country when, you know, when it gets more broadly embraced. But that's why I think there's something in common between California and New York, even though they're totally different in the vibe of the place and a lot of the metabolism is different. It's still the openness to new ideas, you know, tends to be – you see that. That's the thing that holds L.A. and New York are kind of in common. You get those places that are willing to embrace change in a way and then kind of push the boundaries of what's considered conventional or acceptable. And, you know, still the case that cannabis isn't legal in New York State, you know, which is – you know, you think everybody says New York is like the most liberal place in the country.
Right.
But you know, they're still behind on some stuff like that. You know, we're going to get there, and it's not very far off now, but it's not – it hasn't been at the forefront of that change.
What do you think about in New York City the stop and frisk situation?
They still have that now? Did they stop that?
Yeah, they stopped that. You know, it was
they stopped.
They stopped that. You know, de Blasio moved away from that. I think, you know, it was, you know, you think about the period.
It's very Gestapo-ish.
Yeah.
You know?
It was not, you know, you think about the three terms that Mike Bloomberg had as mayor were really good for the city in a lot of ways. And there were a lot of things that were. You know, the city got better in almost every way that you could measure. But there were a few things that were still fucked up that needed to change, and I think that was one of them for sure. Mm. You know, it takes time to change some stuff. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
for sure.
You know, that's of course a Giuliani thing. You know, from where it started was back before that, and you know, just it's a pretty good place now. You know,
it is.
New York's a pretty good place.
It definitely is. It's a mecca when I go there. I get to visit probably once a year.
And you said you grew up in Park Slope?
Yeah.
Born in Park Slope?
Yeah. Well, born at St. Vincent's in New York City and, you know, then grew up in Park Slope.
So you and Mike basically have like Brooklyn, have kind of like Brooklyn,
yeah.
Brooklyn DNA in common.
Yes,
that's why you guys are doing this podcast together.
That's how we came together.
I believe so. Yeah,
you guys have the 7-1 down and deep in your gut somewhere. Yes. You got the 7-1-8.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The 7-1-8.
Big time, bro. Mike, do you watch much football?
No, but I watched some football the other day. I think it was the San Francisco. Then I watched was it the Kansas City Chiefs? Yeah, they played really good, right?
Yeah. Great.
And they played good.
Great
quarterback
football this weekend.
A fun guy. He's exciting to
Mahomes.
Watch. Yeah, he's exciting to watch.
Unbelievable to watch.
Really exciting.
I think he's one of the best players I've ever seen.
Listen, man.
In the history of the league.
I don't know if he's the greatest ever, but listen, he makes me feel like he's the greatest ever because he gets me. I'm excited. I was excited watching. And I'm not a football fan, but I'm excited when I see greatness.
Yeah.
And it was enthusiasm. I saw enthusiasm, and that's the word I'm looking for.
Yes.
That's what made me excited.
So the Chiefs and the 49ers are in the Super Bowl this year. It's going to be a great game. All this talk, it's time to put your money where your mouth is and go to betonline.ag.
Yeah, go online and take advantage of the off-bet bonuses in the business, you know?
Since they are our friends and exclusive partners, you can set up a free account and use the promo code PODCAST1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. Mike, what do you think about the Wilder versus Fury fight coming up next month?
Wow, this is going to be an exciting fight like the first one was. I'm always with Tyson Fury. How can I bet against a guy that has a name, my same name? I can't do that. I'm always with Tyson Fury. If somebody's going to name somebody after me, how am I going to bet against them? I don't care if he was the worst fighter in the world. I'm going to be his fan until he's not fighting no more.
That's it. Now that you're armed with that knowledge, visit betonline.ag. And bet big with the fast payouts and high limits. Use promo code PODCAST1. That's PODCAST, PODCAST, 1-O-N-E, for 50% sign-up bonus.
Bet Online, your online sportsbook expert.
Mike, I'm pretty beat up from my days of playing football. Had a lot of injuries. I had a shoulder injury, back injury. And back then, I don't know about you, but the only way they dealt with that pain was a lot of pills.
Well, I didn't take pills, but they shot me up a lot with Novocaine.
Shots.
Yeah, shots. I was a shot. I loved shots.
Did you ever use Toradol?
Not that I remember. No.
Toradol was big in the league. Man, you take a shot. You go into the doctor's office, pull down your pants, and you take his giant needle, give you a shot in the ass of this stuff, Toradol. We called it the T-Train. And you felt like Superman, like you could run through a brick wall.
Man, they still have that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, the NFL outlawed it.
Yeah, I can imagine. Because, yeah. You know, once it wear off, you're murdered. Oh. You're dead, huh?
Dude, you'd wake up the next day, you felt like you were
hit by a train. But, you know, being younger back then, we just wanted to get rid of that pain for that moment, that 45 minutes, yeah. That hour and a half, whatever it was. We didn't care what the circumstances were. You know that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, nowadays, I mean, isn't it a blessing? You've started Tyson Ranch. You know the wonderful powers, the healing properties of CBD.
Absolutely. And like before, I've never thought I'd ever be educated on nothing that, from such a fascinating perspective of my body and bodies in general.
But, Mike, not all CBD is created equal. This is why I'm so glad we've discovered Feels.
Feels is so amazing. Feels is like the premium CD delivered right at your door, man. I would love that. That's going to be so awesome on my Christmas list.
This is high quality, full spectrum, with a complete cannabinoid profile. And it's third-party tested, so you know you're getting the best.
In other words, Feels is for real.
That's right, dude. And if you're new to CBD, don't be scared or intimidated.
I agree with that, because Feels is an amazing set of people, and they will guide you right through your first CBD experience.
Feels works naturally to help you feel better.
And there's no high, there's no hangover, or no addiction, or nothing like that, of course, you know, what we worry about in taking these products.
Yep. Feels has us feeling our best every day, and it can help you too.
And again, become a member today. Go into the feels.com/hotboxing. Get 50% off your first order with free shipping.
That's Feels, feals.com/hotboxing, to become a member and get 50% off automatically on your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/hotboxing.
I lived in Brooklyn for 10 years, more than 10 years. And what happened in those 10 years from 2003 to about when I left in 2016. So I was there 13 years. Wow, fuck. A long time. I forgot it was that long. I might have been stoned for part of that time. It's possible. But what happened was Brooklyn became this big brand. You know, you think about when you grew up there, right? Like Brooklyn was – like Manhattan was the shit, and and the outer boroughs were the outer boroughs, and but people thought Brooklyn was like less, right? And then Brooklyn got super trendy, right? So it's like that whole the brownstone Brooklyn thing that was, you know, the Cosby family made that as a television show made really famous, and then Williamsburg, where I lived for a long time, became like the capital of hipster Brooklyn. So you would go to like Amsterdam or Paris or wherever, you know, Copenhagen, and people talk about Brooklyn now. Like Brooklyn is like for a lot of people around the world, Brooklyn is cooler.
Very hip.
Is cooler in their minds than Manhattan is.
For sure.
New York Magazine, at some point in the middle of that, they did a thing about how about Brooklyn being, you know, the new Manhattan, you know, and Manhattan's trying to catch up to Brooklyn because, like, if you were, you know, the combination of it's a, you know, more racially diverse and all that kind of artisanal shit going on.
That's
and all
great, but listen, all that stuff is great going on. I'm still apprehensive about living there.
Yeah, really?
My past experience make me apprehensive. I don't care how beautiful that place looks.
Right.
You know, just, whoa, be careful.
So if I took you back to Park Slope and we walked you down the street
Looks like.
Right, but you're walking down the street with a bunch of people, strollers, you'd still be like, you'd still have the clenched up, you'd be like ready for a fight.
No, I'm just saying anything can happen.
Yeah.
People can just, in Brooklyn, they just ride by in cars, get out of cars. They don't do no drive-by, but they get out of cars and start trouble, New York people. Just anything. People see you, it's just weird. You know what I mean? I know Brooklyn for being violent.
Yeah.
You know, you're on Park Slope and you're not, and you, and you're not Italian, you're dead. You know, you're dead. If you in Howard Beach, you're black, you're dead.
Yeah.
It's hard to, I think it's hard to get over, like, when you have the formative experience of your life where you have a certain kind of, like, you grew up someplace. It kind of doesn't matter if the place changes a lot. You still, no. It's still.
I've seen them dead bodies on the streets.
Yeah.
You know, you never forget that.
Hmm. Yeah. It's
when
hard.
I go there, I say, wow, I remember he got shot here. I remember they threw that big bolt off the roof, an refrigerator off the roof on the cop's car here. And, you know, wow, this place is beautiful. White people live here now. Holy shit. That's how I think. I said, holy shit. I even saw, like, are you white man? She said, yes, I am. I'm saying she's talking shit and everything. So I'm saying, whoa. They own the neighborhood now. It's just a trip how it had changed like that.
Must have been fucking weird for you to do the Broadway show, right?
Hey, yeah. Because I was, when I was a kid, right down the street where I would snatch people's chains or snatch their pockets out their wallet, or people on the street was, after I did it, that next day I would come by and the people that owned the store would say, you little motherfuckers start throwing things at me or chasing me because they saw me snatch the chain the other day. And now I walk down the street, everybody's, Mr. Tyson, Mr. Tyson, gotta get your autograph, Mr. Tyson, Mr. Tyson, Mr. Tyson. And that's really freaked me out.
What a trip.
Yeah, it really freaks me out.
What a trip.
It's like, I mean, you can't escape your past, right?
No, I don't try to escape it.
No, I mean just in general, people. I don't mean you, yeah. But I mean just in general, yeah. Your past is your past. Like yeah. You have
it's those there.
Those associations when the stuff that like your idea of what a place is like from when you grew up is so powerful. How much how it leaves those impressions. They're never going to go away. Like somewhere, no matter what it looks like, no matter how much has changed, you still have the thing of like this is what it was like when I was coming up, right?
And that's, what was that movie when the old man had old, and the little kid had the old man? He said, "May I have more, sir, please?" What was the name of that play? You remember that play? He asked for more, but the guy was the kind of guy, he had all the little kids, they lived in London, he had all the little kids go out and steal and bring the money back to him. But that was my life.
Oliver Twist.
We had our parents' friends, and our job was to rob people. My parents, my mother would have a boyfriend, I'd have a man. I don't know if it was a boyfriend, I never saw him before. Have a man come, have sex with a man, we'd rob him, we'd cut his pockets, we'd, you know, rob him. Then have an older guy come up here and throw him out. Something like that. What you doing with my woman? It was just everything was a scam. Everything was about beating the system. My whole life was consistent about beating the system or the white man or whoever it was that owned this world. And we were fucking subservient people, but we had to come up some kind of way. I had no idea that I was just poor and I was uneducated. I didn't know what to do and I didn't know how I got put in this world. What was my crime?
I think, you know, I think that your story is like one of the great American stories, is what I think. I mean, I watched on the way out here two movies that I'd seen before, but I watched them again just for the hell of it because I thought it'd be cool to watch them. I watched the Toback movie and then Spike's movie. And just thinking about the, you know, I think I mean, you got a lot of life in front of you. You and I were born like 6 months apart, right? You were born in 66, right? So June 30th. So January 23rd, 66. So you're 6 months younger than me, basically, right? So you got a lot of life still ahead of you. I hope we're going to be around for a while longer. So who knows where the story goes. But just this part of it, you know, you think about where you came from, what you live, the good and the bad, right? Just the whole arc of it. It's just a great, you know, if you think about America in the second half of the 20th century and, you know, now into the 21st century, the story you lived from that description of your childhood through, you know, the rise, the fall. You've had a couple rises and a couple falls. It's a fucking great story. I mean, like, again, it's the good, the bad, and the ugly, but like as a story of overcoming adversity, of reaching the highest heights, you know, and then having to suffer various kind of challenges and setbacks and overcoming those and getting to where you are. It's like, the story is, the ending has not been written. Like I said, you got a lot more to go, but if you were going to write like about a great, you know, you're thinking about what would be among the many great American novels that could be written. This is a great. It's a fantastic journey you're on. That's what I think. It's an incredible fucking tale. Is what it is.
It's interesting that you said it because life is I explain it like this. When I said like I know somebody that grandmother was a slave. I've known somebody who was old enough and his grandmother was a slave. So I'm saying he knew his grandmother. And he knew me. So this man knew a slave, and he knew me. wow, the distance between the two, it seems so far away, but it's not.
Yeah, it was like, it was one of the things Chris Rock talked about. I remember a few years ago, that's cool. A couple years ago, Chris Rock did an interview somewhere that I saw where he talked about how his grandmother, I think his grandmother, but not his mom, I think, but I think it was his grandmother who in South Carolina, like within his lifetime, his grandmother used to have to go when she would get when she would have to have dental work done. She would have to go to the veterinarian in South Carolina because like no dentist would see a black person. So if she had to get a tooth pulled or something, she'd have to go to the veterinarian to get the dog to get her tooth pulled, right?
Oh yeah.
And that was like, but that's like a thing where you're like, it's like Chris Rock, and it's like this was, he did this thing, it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I remember reading this interview, but just to your point about like, he's like, you know, my grandmother used to have to go to the veterinarian to get a tooth pulled, right? That's like within my lifetime, that's how fucked up things
listen,
were.
Listen, no, this is interesting. Do you know the scar? This has happened. This is a grandmother, but it left a scar on him.
Yeah, right. Totally. Yes.
You don't even know this woman, probably.
Yeah.
But it left a scar on him.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, and that's how it is in all, I don't know, I know definitely black communities, we're scarred from the past. You know, most of our pain is pain from the past. You know, and we internalize them to the future.
I mean, that's the other thing. I think if you've lived your life, you just got an incredible number of stories too. Like just – I'm a great – you know, I love story. I'm a storyteller, right? So, you know, I think about just having lived, you know, the things that people are obsessed with in America, right? They're obsessed with money. They're obsessed with fame. They're obsessed with winning. They're obsessed with celebrity. They're obsessed with a lot of – that's a lot of stuff that American culture is obsessed with, right? You at various times have been at the absolute pinnacle of all those things, right? The greatest winner in your thing that you competed in your sport, you know, made a shitload of money, lived at the highest level of glamour, celebrity, fame, fortune, media attention, tabloid culture, going to prison. Like, I mean, all the shit that we're all obsessed with at one time or another, you've been at the absolute top of the mountain. Or the you know, going to prison at the absolutely, you know, the depth of the valley, you know. And again, people are obsessed in this country with prison too, right? Like we – people watch fucking prison shit on television all day long. You just have lived this like, you know, for all the categories of things people obsess about, you have had some experience with, and not just an experience with, but like the most extreme experiences with. And I just like – when I hear you tell the stories you tell, the memories you have, good and bad – I just think like it's kind of crazy that you've been at the center of so many of the different like things that people in this country spend hours and days and months like that's just obsessed with.
That's
right?
Interesting too that you say that, because all these things you see, all these pinnacles of success, all these zenith and all this stuff, all I experienced, and then I experienced a total and none of it meant anything. Right. I haven't seen nothing.
Right.
It's nothing. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I haven't been anywhere. I haven't made my first step yet. So when does it happen yet? When I die? Do I start living then? Now that's where my mind is. What happens when I die?
It's a good question. That's one I can't answer.
To this energy that I have, like the energy you have right now
Eben
in your mind. Yeah. Whatever it is.
Eben.
What happened?
Eben.
What happened?
I'm sorry.
What happened with that energy? Did the energy die?
It's okay. It's okay.
Huh? Did the energy die? Did this energy we have, it just go black out and die? Or does it, you know, does it travel somewhere into a bug, a butterfly, a rock, a tree? What do you think?
John, you know about the toad?
I don't have a clue. I know about the toad, and you know, I do. And it's a... I think all of the – this is another category.
Who are you, John?
Who am I?
Well, you can't – what's your purpose, John?
Those are good questions. I got the toad right here in front of me, or at least a version of the toad.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it was funny. I was just literally on TV a couple days ago talking to this guy who wrote this book. Do you know this guy, Michael Pollan?
Yes.
You know who that is?
Yeah, I'm just finishing How to Change Your Mind.
Right. So Pollan is, you know, a famous famous writer, lives up in Northern California, and had written most of his career about food and particularly about vegetables. Like has written – wrote this book called The Omnivore's Dilemma and
yeah,
wrote
– great nutritional
– yeah.
Writing.
So the dude's like very – and he got interested in psychedelics – because of his interest in plants, like as a nutritionally and otherwise, but he's obsessed with plants, right? So, and he's written huge best-selling books. The Omnivore's Dilemma was a giant number one New York Times bestseller for a long time. So he wrote this book that you've read or are almost through.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry about the name thing. It takes me two, but it always takes me two times. We just met, so I'll never fuck it up again.
Thank you.
But he's written this book about the psychedelic movement now, like where it is now, not the 60s version, not Tune In, Turn On, Drop Out, not like the – and that right. There's like a lot of legitimacy to that too. But
he gives a little history of that, which I thought which is helpful.
Cool. Yeah. But it's funny because his book is about the fact that to a large extent, about what's going on with the increasing acceptance in the medical community of the therapeutic benefits of various kinds of psychoactive drugs. So it's like from MDMA, ecstasy, to organics like psilocybin and the toad and other like organic ibogaine, other stuff that people take that grow out of the ground. But all of that stuff, which was, you know, demonized for a really long time, and to some extent LSD still is, but all of that stuff, which was demonized by the culture for so long, now it's starting to change.
Yeah.
And it's starting to change because of a relatively small number of people who have fought this fight for years and years. A friend of mine, when I was I went to Harvard as a graduate student at the Kennedy School of Government.
I see you.
And I'm
I
say that though not to brag, but just because I met a guy there in 1988 whose name was Rick Doblin.
Oh yeah, of course. Head of MAPS.
So Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies. And Rick had started MAPS a couple years earlier when I met him in 88. Mm. And so I've known that guy now 30 years I met Rick. And Rick in 1988 was talking about how MDMA, psilocybin, marijuana to a lesser extent, but he was mostly focused on the psychedelics, had these potentially huge therapeutic benefits for terminal cancer patients, for soldiers with PTSD, for all that stuff, right? And this is 1988, okay?
Wow.
In 1988, I thought in 1988 there was no way that weed would ever be legal. There was still a huge thing that you had to decide in 1988 if you went to get a job someplace, like, am I going to allow myself to be drug tested? That was like the fucking war on drugs.
Yeah, that was the thing back then. I don't want to know. I got drug tests. No drug tests.
Right, but that was the big discussion, right? You had
for sure.
Nancy Reagan, Just Say No. All that shit was happening. Those, you know, that was a big cultural moment. So to have somebody in 1988 say to me, hey, you know what? Like, first of all, weed's definitely going to be legal in our lifetime. I'm like, I don't think that's true.
Way.
He was sitting in his apartment. He's holding a bud this big. And I'm like, okay, I like that. Let's smoke that. I can smoke that whole bud. And you're not going to convince me that that's going to be legal in my lifetime. And now it's mostly there, right? But he also was talking about the psychedelic stuff. And he was like, this is my cause, right? I'm going to try to work within real legitimate government channels to get the FDA and the DEA and all of the appropriate authorities to reschedule some of these drugs so that we can start to A, do research on them to prove that they're medically beneficial and then to start actually using them with people who need them, right? In 1988, and I was like, Rick, I love you and I believe in this cause and I had done all those drugs and I love them all and I thought they were great and I could see, like, I'm not just from a recreational standpoint, I could see what he was talking about. I'm like, I can imagine that a cancer patient or someone
soldier,
with PTSD.
Yeah.
These could be powerful things that could alleviate people's pain and help them to heal and to achieve higher understanding and all that stuff. But I thought the guy was fucking nuts to think that was ever going to be achievable on a timeline that would be meaningful to me and him. And I was just totally fucking wrong because now I'm sitting on television 3 days ago with Michael Pollan, and Michael Pollan's written a best-selling book about how it's happening.
Yeah.
Like, at the best medical schools, the best research institutions in the country are breaking through and saying, yeah, you know what? This shit's real. This is going to work. It is therapeutic. It is legit. The harms are minimal, if any, and we need to change the laws.
And it inspires you.
And it's inspiring, of course. And so the laws are changing, and we're breaking through. And so, you know, I think, you know, it's like I've given up I always was hopeful about these achievements and this progress, but I was skeptical about it because I thought the culture would fight back. But I'm now, I'm like, you know what? Like, the progress is happening on all these fronts so much faster than anybody ever thought it would happen. And there's still a long way to go. But now I'm like, you know, I think we're going to get there. And yeah. and people who need these medicines are going to get them. And people who need them for – who aren't even as extreme as cancer patients or people with PTSD, people are going to – like we're – like the progress is happening. This is a place where there's a lot of fucked up stuff in our world. But on this front, you well, can think, see every day that things are getting better. They're absolutely. Getting better. So –
Well, I think that the state of this country, of the world, the state of consciousness that we're in is calling these things out, you know? Yep. That's why people are being drawn to these.
Need to realize that some things on this world that we can't explain.
Well, have exactly. you guys – I don't know how much you guys have talked about this on the podcast, but what made you start to experiment in this area? I don't know how much you guys have. You guys might talk about this all the time. I don't know.
Psychedelics?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. This is interesting.
Have you guys spent time on this on this podcast a lot?
We talk about it a lot.
This is going to be very interesting.
It might be so it might be repetitive for some of the listeners, but I'm interested. I just want to know.
No, man. Yeah.
I want to know how you got there.
Oh, listen. I'm an addict. I'm a bad addict, and I'm a drunk, and I'm a sex addict. I'm addicted to everything, okay? So I'm living my life, doing my cocaine, doing all my stuff, and one day I don't care. And so we're doing a pod, like you, and this guy's a doctor. Yeah. And he's talking about some kind of drug that's going to make me see God.
5-MeO-DMT.
And this, and it's going to like being in heaven, you're going to die. And I said, where is it at? He said, I have it right here. Well, I said, well, let me check it out. Let's check it. He said, well, we can't do it right here. I said, why not? Because I didn't understand that kind of drug that you had to situate, you had to position yourself. I didn't understand the drugs is what you take in the street. You just take the drug right here and let's continue talking. I thought we were going to do it, but it wasn't that. So he said, all right, wait. And so during our conversation, he's talking. I said, man, where's the shit? Are you ready? And he said, oh, no, wait. And so we go. The interview's over. So we go in the room over here in Mexico somewhere. And he give me this, like, crack pipe, and he put some... The golden dust. It's like gold dust. He put gold dust in it and he lit it and he said, inhale. And once it came out, it was all cool. Once it came out, whoa. Oh shit, I fucked up. These white motherfuckers killed me. I'm dead. Oh, shit. Fuck. Why am I trying to prove I am dead? Oh, shit. I'm dead. And I woke up, I guess it was 10 minutes later, and man, I just was so afraid. I didn't know what happened.
What was the first thing? Well, what did you know that was, the first thing you did?
The first thing when it hit me?
Yeah, what was the substance? What was the thing you were
smoking? It was the toad.
It was the toad, okay.
5-MeO-DMT.
I've seen Aztec pyramids. I see hieroglyphics. I'm seeing things. I'm seeing chambers of the past. I can't see myself. It's just energy. My body doesn't exist, and it's just noise. You can't even explain. I stopped breathing. I died. And I was telling the guy, I said, I'm not dead. I'm dead. I am dead. I'm dead. Right. I'm fucking dead. Keep it. You can be real with me. I can handle it. I'm dead. Right. And I was so scared. Once I woke up, I said, where's my wife? Where's my family? Where's everybody at? And I said, do they know where I'm at? Do they know I'm here? And I was just, I've never experienced anything like that before. I actually died, and I didn't know what to do. It stripped me of my ego. I thought I was a tough guy. When it strips you of your ego, it's like ego-killing.
Ego death.
Yeah, killing drug. And once it kills you, don't know, man, you feel so you don't even know what you're afraid of. You don't know what you think somebody's going to kill you, fuck you, rape you, murder. You don't know what's going to happen. And you just, fuck. You're happy it's over. But after it's over, you get that, them endorphins that feel like, what the fuck happened? And I'm just so happy to be up, and I'm fucking crying. I'm holding people. And that's the first time I did it, right?
All the drugs you ever did your whole life.
Yeah.
You did a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
Right, a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
We went to rehab, did the whole thing. Did all the drugs.
10 times. Yeah.
Did all the drugs we...
Big time.
Right, did... Okay.
Big time.
All right, so you did all that shit.
Yes.
You're 53.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the first time you really did psychedelics was at age 50, 52.
Yes.
And it changed your life.
Yes.
You're like, so how soon after you first did had the toad experience, how soon after did you do it again?
I did it again that same day.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
I did it around 3 more times the next time I did it.
Yeah.
Which was like a month ago.
Okay.
You know, and
so what's your total? You've done a half dozen times now.
Yes.
And you're.
And every time is a different experience.
And you're. Oh, I know. You're all in.
Yes.
You're all in. What about you?
I can't wait to do it again.
Right. Well, let's fuck it. Let's get some of that DMT in here right now. Let's go. Have you guys ever done a pod while you guys were all
while doing DMT?
I know.
Oh my God.
It doesn't last that long when you do the DMT.
Yeah, help yourself there, John.
No, I'm. No. I figured the tray's there for a reason, right?
Of course,
looked. I considered that kind of a.
I haven't done the toad. I've done DMT and psilocybin and LSD, and I think that. You know, anyone who tries these things, guys like Rick Doblin.
Yeah.
Had you tried psychedelics at that point?
Yeah.
You had?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, the experience is...
I would say that by the time I got to graduate school, which was that, 1988, so I was in college in 1983, 1987, there were not that many substances that you could name that I have not tried, that I had not tried by 1988. There was probably some.
Yeah.
It was some. It would be on the list of stuff that there is to try versus stuff that I hadn't tried.
You tried a lot.
The list was over here was a lot longer than the list over here.
Hey, I get it, dude. I totally get
after
that.
After I did the toy, I never wanted to do cocaine and another drink.
For me, it's something about these experiences that is so uplifting, connecting. You know, it dissolves... the disconnection, the isolation, you know, in any way, even if you are alone,
right?
You know,
but you've done MDMA.
I haven't done MDMA.
All right, you gotta make some progress. We gotta help him.
I don't know. I'm not really called to MDMA.
Well, you don't have to be. Yeah, you don't have to be called. I just think you should.
That's my vibe.
You should broaden your experience.
Yeah,
it's you got one life, man. One life.
Dude,
as far as I know,
I've been really no. I think we're here a lot.
Yeah. Oh, you do. You're a reincarnation guy.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Okay.
You know.
I think that's legit.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I think it's an interesting thing about, like, I've always thought about the notion of, like, people who believe in reincarnation versus people who don't, right? Like, how that changes your life.
Yeah.
Your life philosophy. If you think you're coming back.
Yeah.
You have a different approach to things than if you think you're only here once, right?
It's not that as
much
as...
Do you think that's our ego thinking that we're coming back saying that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the only way I can conduct my life is guided by the higher power that I've come to have a relationship throughout my life.
Right.
You know, and that's just whatever it is inside me that tells me when something feels right and good and when something feels off and wrong. You know, and
how do you feel that everything we learned since we've been a child about the world has been a lie? How do you feel about that?
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
I don't know. You know, I'm fucking Adam and Eve, fucking Christmas and all that bullshit and how this shit got with, you know, Martians came here and fairy tales did this and my baby was born without a dick and cum, you know, all that stuff.
Well, some of those stories I'm familiar with, and some of them I'm not. But some of those stories, like the Santa Claus Christmas thing, I'm familiar with. The dickless baby thing, I don't know as much about. That's not what I know.
Somebody
about.
Being born without having.
No, I understand. I'm just saying. I don't know, man. I think you know.
Someone would say the angels blessed them with.
Yeah,
blessed these people.
Yeah.
John, so what is your take on life then, dude?
Oh, come
you
on,
think
man.
We're just here
what kind of a
once?
What kind of a podcast is this? This is like a fucking, are you my priest? My shaman? Which one?
More like a shaman.
Well, maybe.
I'm more like a shaman than a shaman. I don't know, man. This is not my area of expertise. What are we here?
But your feelings about this.
My sense about my...
But this ties into your overall feelings about the state of the country.
Yes.
Trump as a president.
I think it
fucking,
is...
You know, abortion laws being put into place in 2019. Yes. All of this.
How
shit
do you feel about somebody
together?
Telling a woman what to do with her body? Like she's useless. That she doesn't know what to do with her body.
I feel
she's a fucking puppet.
I feel very strongly opposed to that posture, and I find it really troubling that there's anybody who thinks that they should be able to legislate control over over women's or anybody else's bodies. So I'm against that.
Who gives them the right to have even fucking authority over women?
I think
why don't women have a fucking authority, a fucking council for their own fucking living. They're totally two different species.
There's a question a lot of women are asking, especially right now when they feel like they're having a lot of their rights constrained or stripped away from them.
I'm not a liberal guy.
You're not.
No, and I really believe that, you know, women should have their people. They should have, be able to live their own right, and they should even have their own laws, because we'll violate them anytime we get a chance. That's our nature as men, to violate the weakest sex, even right. The kindest men.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, yeah, what's the word, what's our question? What's the question on the table?
I don't know, John. I don't,
yeah.
No, I just, you know, as far as, here's my question. Here's my question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why does it matter? Why the fuck does it matter to stand up for what you feel is right? Let's say standing up against some of the policies of this current administration.
How come a woman's not making any laws over abortion? How come she can't make a right over abortion? How come this is a bunch of fucking men are going to make a fucking rule over a fucking bunch of women? How is that fucking right?
Why is that important if this life is trivial and you only get one shot at it? Why is that important?
Well, I'm not sure that we're going to this is like a, you know, not a political philosophy question, but a philosophy question. I claim no expertise to this, nor do I think anybody really could possibly give a shit what I have to think about it. But I will say that I think that to say that you only are here one go round, and that there's no either reincarnation nor heaven, or, you know, there's no afterlife. If you believe that you are here as a corporeal being, you're going to be here for however many years, and when you die, it's over. Your consciousness is done. You've finished. I don't think that's at all that the corollary to that is that life is trivial, or that I think, you know, you could argue the opposite, and that, you know, we are, you know, we have a sort of profound obligations to our fellow travelers on this planet for however long we're here, and that in fact the notion of life as a finite thing sort of increases the level of responsibility that you have to take that limited gift that you have and make the most of it. And that part of making the most of it involves responsibility to your kids, if you have them, and your grandkids, if they have them, you know, to your elders who bring you up, that you're more, you know, this is, if you only got one shot at it, you've got to get it right. And I think, you know, the fact that we as a species, I don't have children, so I speak as someone as an observer of it, but like that we have, that there are lots of people out there who have, you know, descendants, right? And that our obligation in our finite time here is to try to make sure the world is as good as it could be for them going forward. That, like, so that I'm not sure that I, that's, I, my, to the, I think you can
hey,
feel,
you're right
though,
on.
I think you can feel a profound sense of social and political responsibility. Regardless of what your view is about these things, whether you think that whether you're an atheist or whether you're a Christian or whether you're a Jew, whether you think there's an afterlife, whether you don't, I think all of those things still push you towards having a sense of responsibility, a collective responsibility to try to make the place that you are for you and your descendants and the species and its descendants, to make that place as habitable and sustainable and just as possible. So that's, I don't know, that's not a, I don't, I, that's not exactly a potted worldview for me, but that's, I think that's the answer. I think that's the answer to the question of why you should give a shit if we're only here for one life.
I don't think we know anything.
I agree with that.
I think we don't know anything. I was told if you take a guy that lived to be 100 years old and he partied all his life for 100 years, and you take a guy that discovered the world for 100 years, and that's all he did for 100 years, at the end of the day, they both would know nothing about the world. This world, you know,
it's unknowable.
It's inconceivable.
It's inconceivable.
I you know what it looks when you look at us with a camera inside the atmosphere, and you see the other planets. It's almost like we're in a body. We're in some large body, and we're fucking probably a cancer or something in this body.
Maybe. We're just bacteria.
Yes.
Because
sorry to give you the impression that
I know this is like we're like, man.
No, John, I just you're the
we
man.
We are bacteria.
Dude.
No, we are we are some nasty motherfuckers if we didn't get those shots.
Yeah.
If we didn't get those shots, because right now we go to those Jawas, those guys that's in India on the island that's never seen men for like 60,000 years. And if we go right there, if they don't kill us with the spears, we're gonna kill them in 2 days or 2 weeks because we're fucking filthy. Yeah. And we have shots. We have shots, and we're going to still kill them.
Yeah.
It's pollution.
Yeah. So what's like I, what's in the – you guys don't – like when you have the, do this podcast, I looked at the many guests who've been on it, and they've, it's an awesome achievement. You guys have got this thing going. There's some great conversations that have happened here. But you haven't had a lot of people in here who've like – you guys don't talk a lot of politics in here, right?
No.
It's not like a thing you do. So like I'm curious, like what's your – you know,
but I'm
most
Let's
people
– Let's do it.
Most people in the country right now, wherever they stand on the spectrum, feel like – have a very strong reaction to the president of the United States. Like
yeah.
a lot of people hate him. Some a lot of people love him. He's got you know, but it's very polarizing. And yes. and the, there's a sense for a lot of people right now the stakes are really high. Right, that like somehow this presidency is a little different. You go to your thing about like you know how many chances you get. Like why on some level you could you know you say well you know the president change can change every 4 years. Why do we give a shit about any one of them? You know there have yeah. been a lot. There'll be a lot more. You know anything's you know remediable down the line. And yet for a lot of people right now they feel like Trump is different. It's not like
right.
they don't look at Trump and say well here's a president who's kind of he's here transiently. He'll maybe do some damage. Maybe he'll be good depending on your point of view. But eventually he's going to go. More people right now feel like it's a fucking 4-alarm fire. It's a state of emergency. Like the country's at stake. That the gravity of all this stuff, the Trump, again, whether you love him or hate him, either poses a unique capacity to make America great again, or you think, like most liberals and I would say a larger number of people, just statistically it's true that there are more people who don't like Trump than like him, you know, who are like, this guy's a threat to American democracy.
Yeah.
He could fuck the whole country up and we can never recover.
Yeah.
So that's how people feel right now out in the world. So I'm curious, like – you know, what do you guys think about that? Do you guys think this is – do you give a shit about Trump?
I think American people panic too easy. They're quick to panic before they want to dissect the problem. Oh, shit, they're coming. Oh, shit, the niggas are coming. Oh, God, this. And we panic too much without analyzing the situation.
Yeah.
And that's what I believe in. And I believe Trump brings out of a lot of fears of us because a lot of people with that mentality believe whatever he says is true. Oh, shit, the Mexicans are coming to get us. We need the wall.
Right.
You know, it's not because, you know, some people could look at Trump and say, this guy's a fucking idiot or something. And then some guys can look at him and say, he's right. He knows what he's talking about.
Right.
You know, but the deal is that it's about you as a human being. The majority of the people work like this because I was one of them fucking poor slobs. We have no information. So only our information is just the television, which is lies. And after the television tells us what happened, we go in the neighborhood and we explain what the television told us and this is right. what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, is that just...
propaganda.
Not only propaganda, but if that's just such an antiquated way of getting information and believing information, it's a whoa, you know?
Yeah.
It's the people, it's our minds that are molded. We've been molded for hundreds of years, thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years. And then we've been changing. You know, we go from slavery, we go to surfism, then we go to communism, and then we try to go to a capitalism. And then, capitalism poison everything. It takes communism, and now we're going to start selling things in communism. We'll sell pictures of Mao in communism. That we'll still be communist, but that won't be bad. We'll live like capitalists, and that's just what the world is going through. There won't be no more. Communist is only a name now. There's no actual communist that's really happening in the world. You know, that's right. just what's really happening. Not in Laos, not in Cambodia, not none of those
Not
places.
Russia?
No. What are you?
What's Russia?
Russia is the most capitalist country in the world, probably.
But how is it run with the people? How is the economy?
The economy is magnificent, but listen, they need to, I don't know.
I don't want to get there yet. Hold on. I want to answer John's question from my perspective.
Please.
I think the title of your show, The Circus.
Yeah.
Is a perfect explanation of it.
I was just explaining the circus.
Yes, exactly.
That's why I said what I'm going to
I
was just explaining the circus.
You know, to me, it's, you know, I have a lot of feelings about Trump. I don't know what to say other than America got exactly who we deserved. The Democrats fucked up a lot of shit, in my opinion, in that last election. They're probably, to the looks of it, to me, the Democrats are going to fuck it up for themselves again, and Trump is probably going to win because they think Biden is the fucking leader of the pack, which, fuck me if he's the fucking next guy.
Why is that?
A lot of people love Mr. Biden.
I don't like him for very.
Tell me, really?
Reasons.
Tell me. I want to hear this.
He's got just very old ideas. antiquated. He has some weird fucking shit with young women, girls. I've got a lot of skepticism around some of those high-level individuals and their practices as far as that goes. And I just don't like him. I don't understand why he's even deciding to run now. You know, it doesn't
we
make
don't
any
have
sense.
Well, who else is going to run?
I like Bernie Sanders.
Really?
Dude. I like Bernie.
If my mentor Custom Model was alive, he would go with Bernie Sanders.
I love Bernie.
Why is that?
So fucking communist.
Right.
Socialist.
Yeah. He's communist. That nigga communist.
Cuss was a communist?
Yeah.
I think the state of the world is very. It's in a state of transition.
I got Mao over here. I got Che here. I was raised communist. We were raised in a communist ideology.
That's good on paper.
That's why I lost all my fucking money. I gave it all away. Looks good on him. You know? I gave everybody my fucking money thinking I was helping people. I was just fucking giving people money.
It's just a circus to me, man.
I
don't have a lot of faith in it, and I'm very skeptical of my government.
Well, it's funny. I think that there's a lot, like, in that is, like, a lot of, like, you're not alone. You know, there's like millions of people like you. Like, that's a more common, you know, I live in this world where we all take politics really seriously. And I think I'll argue to the day I die that you should, because it has a huge effect on millions and millions of people. But we, you know, for the people who like follow this stuff day in and day out, they have very, you know, various opinions about things, right? And various opinions about people and assessments and what policies they favor, what personalities they like or don't, what they think is politically effective. In the end, though, they all feel like, there's a caring about it that much, like knowing that much at a detailed level and having those views is sort of like conditioned on the notion that you think that it's a legit enterprise, right? That these are the legitimacy of the whole thing, of the whole game is inbuilt in that way of looking at it. But what I think is true is that if you go around and talk to a lot of people just in the country, they don't their presumption isn't that. Their presumption is that it's all a fucking scam.
Yeah.
And that, like, this the system, you know, these are part of the reasons why Trump was powerful.
Right.
Because, like, him talking, you know, you talk about the system, you know, Bernie Sanders and Trump are powerful in a lot of ways in a similar way, at least they were in 16, because they were like, the system is rigged. Now, Trump was full of shit about most of it.
Yeah.
But as a thing that people heard over and over again, which was, you know, the system is rigged. Everybody's kind of trying to fuck you over. And this whole thing in Washington is so fucking dysfunctional and so corrupt and such a fucking bunch of bullshit that what I'm going to do is I want to blow the whole fucking thing up.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people in 2016 who voted for Trump, it was like, and for Sanders, in different ways, obviously totally different guys.
Absolutely.
But that thing.
I totally agree with
that. That visceral thing for a lot of people was, I know Trump's a clown. I know he's a fucking liar. I know he's not really a billionaire.
Possibly.
I know all that stuff. There are a lot of voters who felt this way. I know all the things that are fucked up about him. And even, I know he says this racist shit about Mexicans across the border. I know all that stuff. But you know what? Like, if I vote for the other person, the same shit's going to happen. It's just going to be more of the same shit. And the last, like, 30 years has just not helped me very much.
Yeah.
It's not really working out really well. So I'm willing to accept – I'm speaking here as a lot of people who voted for Trump, I think. We're part of, like, I know all the problems and I know all the risks. I get that he's all those fucked up things. But the only – but I'm – at least – he's going to change something. He's going to blow the whole thing up. He'll blow it up and we'll see what happens.
But imagine this, guys. Imagine you're a fucking black person and no matter who I vote for, I'm still going to get killed by the fucking cops.
And another perfect example of the thing. So I think for a lot of people, there's just an element of like their frustration with the whole process and their sense that it's all not on the level, that it's like it's a scam in some way and that – that's why people – why so many people are pissed and disenfranchised and alienated from the whole thing. And it's how things like Donald Trump can happen is when there's a lot of people who are looking at the whole thing just going like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
So let's blow it up. So all I'm saying is I think that is – as you think about what's going to happen, people are not less pissed off than they were 4 years ago.
Yeah.
People are not less disenfranchised. People are not – people are like – even this in this relatively good economy, people look around and Trump says the economy is great. The economy is great, and it's the economy is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not terrible. The unemployment rate is low. It's, you know, it's not as great as Trump says, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And people are more pissed off now than they were 4 years ago. So the dynamics of like what's going to happen in the next 18 months as we Trump runs for re-election, you got Democrats running against him. All I know is that all of the stuff that was out there, frustration, the anger, the distrust of the system, the all the other fucking viscerally terrible negative things that are around in America, all of the bad shit is not better. It's just as volatile and fired up as it was then. So it's not going to be a normal election, you know, and Trump makes certain that it's not going to be a normal election because he doesn't give a shit about any of the rules. He'll do whatever the fuck he wants. So I just predict chaos when people ask act what's going to like over what the next 18 months are going to hold. I guarantee you that anybody who's making like certain predictions about what it's going to look like as this race unfolds.
Yeah.
Anybody who makes really certain predictions
hey,
about
John,
that is out of their fucking mind. Yeah. Out of their mind.
Hey.
Yeah.
What do you know about your family? What are you, Italian, Greek?
That's a very good question, but it has nothing to do with Donald Trump. But that's probably for the best. I'm an adopted child, so I know everything about my adoptive family, but I know nothing about my genetic heritage. So
you know, this is interesting you say that. I always say to certain people and then to myself, because I did a research on something, I found something out, and it really freaked me out.
Yeah.
So I did a research on this guy, and his name was Alexander Dumas from, like, the French Revolution and stuff back then.
Yeah.
And he's a mulatto. He's a black guy, right?
Yeah.
His parents from Haiti, and he was in Napoleon. Even before Napoleon, he was in other guys, too. The 16th, Louis the 16th, he was in his army as well. So, but he got in Napoleon's army when Napoleon got army. And so I did research on him and stuff, and his sons and everything. And then when I'm doing research, he used to always go to war when the French Revolution, he had the sword. And so I'm following his ancestry, right? I'm so awesome at that, right? So I'm following. And then I realized that in 48, probably in the 30s, his family, they changed their name from Dumas, he married some Jewish man, to Oppenheimer. They become fencers. He's a swordsman in the war. They become fencers. They win Olympics. They're in the Olympics and stuff. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible, right?
Yeah.
But this is what I'm saying. This is only 200 years. He goes from black, now he's a white Jewish guy.
Wow.
So I wonder sometimes, who was my first bloodline, male? Who was the first one? Where did he come from? Was he black? Who was he?
You learn more about your family as you did, you know, various things over time, right? You, for a long time, you didn't know very much.
No, I didn't know
shit.
And then
you found, like, you, for
yeah,
some of the
yeah.
for some of the stuff you've done in media, you've kind of, like, looked at it, right?
Me and among my half brothers did a lot of research.
Yeah. And so what's like, what of all the stuff that you learned about your family, what's like, what was the stuff that blew your mind most?
Education, musically inclined. I'm not educated and I'm not musically inclined, but that was forced in that bloodline.
Right.
And so most of these guys are teachers, musicians and stuff like that. My son loves music. You know what I mean? He's an A-plus student. He got he had gotten accepted in the school. I forgot the name. It's the school. It's a school or organization that they had Bill Clinton in it. He was one. But my son, he got they want him to be involved in this program now. And it's going to be it's an amazing program. And I'm just so proud of him. Because I've never been to school in my life. And just to see those guys. I have a daughter that just came from NYU, graduated from NYU. She's going to be a producer now, a director, a producer in movies and one of that stuff. And I'm really just so proud. And I just have my oldest son just graduated from American University in D.C. And I'm just amazed these guys are doing this stuff. And I've never been to school in my life. But it just comes from... it's from genetics.
Right.
It's awesome. My mother was a teacher. It's just what it was. That's what they did. That was important in their life during the Reconstruction. Education was important. Entertainment was important to them. You know what I mean? My brother was the first guy to integrated football in his school in North Carolina. Mm. Football. He was a great football player in high school.
That's awesome. It's great to learn all of that.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, that's like...
But what I saw about my family liked the party. They always were out. They like dressing up, looking nice. Or, you know, they're very Southern, so they got their money on their birthday. They tape the money on their clothes for their birthday. So you see money celebrating somebody's birthday.
That's cool.
Very country people, very country.
Well, Mike, you're not formally educated, but you're an educated man.
That's probably my insecurity for not being formally educated. I wanted to just know everything. Everything I know, I realize it's a lie, but if you know it, just knowing a lie is knowing something. You know, just knowing these lies is make you somebody. Just because they're lies, everybody knows there's lies, but if you know them, you're cool. I know nothing but a bunch of lies, but people think I'm smart. How am I smart? Because I know lies? Right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I like your I like this next chapter in your life, man. I like it.
Good, right?
I like it. I like it. It's good. I like it on a variety of levels. I like the self-discovery piece. I like the toad piece. I like the business piece of it. It's like a good, like, you're heading into an excellent new chapter, it feels like to me.
Hey, listen, I never thought this would ever happen in my life. I always said, oh, this shit, I'm going to die soon. This is going to be over, man. I'm going to catch AIDS, or so I'm going to get fucking shot by this guy, by fucking his wife, or something crazy like that. And everything just came to... No, really, guys.
Nobody's
making funny, man.
Dude, I laugh because it's just so amazing to hear you be so honest about
yeah,
you
know,
and you
crazy.
Put it so matter-of-factly and so beautifully that it's just it causes me inspiration inside.
No, but you know what, listen, I didn't know how to live.
Yeah,
like I was champ, I had money, I had all these everything at my beck and call. I didn't know how to live. I didn't know what to fucking do.
Like I said, it's one of the great American stories. I'm not kidding.
It's like mythological.
It's one of the great American stories, and it's not over yet, which makes it like God. I love the story where the big question is what's going to happen next. That's the thing that propels every great narrative, and that's what I want to know about Mike Tyson. What's going to happen next?
We're going to conquer the world, buddy. Tyson
Alexander
Rand.
The Great, baby.
All day. We're not turning back.
Mike, maybe you're so interested in Alexander the Great because you're the reincarnation.
No,
of
I don't know.
Whoa.
Boom! We're listen, done.
Close all the loops.
We better close all the loops.
It's lunchtime. We love you guys. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe to our channel. I'm Evan Britton. God. That's Mike Tyson. This is John Heilemann. We're out of here. Love y'all. Peace.